tired. So tired. Overtired.
You're listening to Overtired, a sometimes monthly podcast. I'm Christina Warren, joined as always by Jeff Severance Gunzel and Brett Terpstra. Hey guys, long time no talk.
Hello. Yeah,
how long has it been? We've been off for 2 weeks?
No, like
I think
three.
I've been off longer though.
Yeah, it's been 3 or 4.
I have no sense of time.
I have
time
sniffles.
Time isn't real. Time is a construct. I live in the fifth dimension.
Okay, that's fine. That's fine.
Cool.
Mute him.
That's rude.
I was just kidding.
Rude.
I can't mute him.
So should we start with a contained mental health corner?
Yeah, it's been a while. I'd love to like hear from everybody, see how everybody's doing, because we've all had stuff going on, and also the podcast market is kind of trash right now, but mostly we've all had stuff going on, so we haven't talked to one another in a while.
We should test the waters with a Patreon.
Yeah.
And just see if our listeners want to support the show. If you're listening and you would be willing to pay a small monthly fee to support the show, please write in, let us know, contact us on any of the various social media services, because it would be a far more sustainable source of income than the fucking ad world right now.
Yeah, and we would be more consistent, I think, for there's no I think about it. Like, if we're taking money from anybody, we're at least speaking for myself.
Well, with Patreon, you can also set it up so that people pay when you publish.
Oh, cool.
So like Amanda Palmer does it. Like, if you're on her Patreon, you can only pay when she releases a song, which she does regularly. But we could just charge people when we release a podcast, which would still give us the ability to take a week off if we needed to. Without feeling like we were screwing people over. So yeah, we'll look into it. Also, I forgot to show you guys this, but we are going to launch some merch on TeePublic. I have some designs done, but I don't know if you guys will love them or not. I might have to try again. I'll show you them after the show. If we get the go-ahead from all three co-hosts, check the show notes for a merch link.
Nice.
Anyway, should I kick off the mental health?
Well, hold on. I have a question. If we start doing Patreon, is that an opportunity for me to launder some of my extra money?
Yes.
Like the way they did in Breaking Bad.
Yes.
For Walt's donation website. Okay, cool.
100%. No, I mean,
that's
like,
great.
I mean, I will say that we should probably, if we do decide to do this and you decide to do that, that we're going to need to go back and edit this episode so that like any comments about the money laundering are gone, which means like if you're listening right now to this, you're hearing something that potentially might be deleted later. So, you know, save it because.
Yeah, but I got to clean my money. Somehow I got to clean it. I'm just sitting on it. It's this Zoom background is fake. It's if you actually were looking at my background, it's just stacks of cash.
Stacks of cash.
With like a single sheet over it.
Stacks on stacks anyway, on stacks.
Yep. Well, I'll look into that some more. Do you think anybody does launder money through Patreon?
Oh, most definitely.
Oh, I'm upset. My family's so tired of me talking about money laundering. I'm obsessed by all the ways that people launder money.
Yeah, I mean, look, they do it through gift cards. They do it through, I mean, you know, Bitcoin, whatever. Yeah. You have to. I have to think that like Patreon and things like that are a source, right? It just
casino
depends.
Casino chips. I see you, Donald Trump. Yeah.
You know, probably just has to depend on like, okay, like the only thing with something like Patreon is you're giving up like whatever fee you're giving up to like launder the money. And then you're also paying the Patreon fees. So I guess you just need to like, you'd probably need to have like a high volume to be able to like make it work. Otherwise, there are probably better ways to launder money. She says as if she's some sort of money laundering expert. I'm not. I've just watched.
We've all seen Ozark.
I was going to say, I've seen Ozark. I've seen a bunch of other heist types of things. Watch Breaking Bad.
Ozark, obviously. Which has the most amazing, quick brief on money laundering that he gives, I think, to his kid, maybe, or maybe no, he's just narrating it. It's early on. And it's like the footage you're seeing is like actual money in actual laundry machine, which is actually part of his process to sort of age the money. Anyway, that's not my mental health check-in. It's definitely not yours, Brett. Yeah. See you in jail.
I got to tell you, so this is officially mental health corner now, but I think it was last week, like I said, no sense of time, but Elle and I got up early to go for a walk in the wildlife refuge, not too far away from us. But it was early, and I've been sleeping until like 8 lately, which is weird for me. But if I get up before then, I am crabby. And I got up before them on this fateful day. I was driving us to, we were just leaving our little neighborhood, which is on a 2-lane street. And someone came up hot on my 6, just riding my ass, which was annoying. But I intentionally went exactly the speed limit, kind of to piss them off. Then it's a double yellow line at a blind curve, and they try to pass me. And my brain's like, oh, fuck no. So I gun it. And we're like racing down this 2-lane road into a blind curve, and they give up and they pull back in behind me. And I roll my window down so I can more easily flip them off when they do eventually pass, which happens. And we flip each other off, and like, my adrenaline's up, but I calm down. Like, I let that kind of thing go very quickly. It's like fun in the moment. But in the meantime, Elle is scared shitless.
Elle's in the car for this?
Yeah. Yeah. Elle's in the car for this, which normally, you know, for this kind of thing, I'm driving alone, but Elle is in the car, and they're scared shitless. And they're screaming at me, Brett, no, what are you doing? What the fuck? No. And I'm not listening. I'm just, and so anyway, it takes them a long time to calm down, which involves like shaking and tears. And like, I really upset both their nervous system and just their emotional state of being. And I felt so stupid, because it would have been so easy to just be like, ah, look at this fucker, and let it happen. But instead I had to escalate. So I did some parts work after that to use IFS speak, and realized there's this part of me that I've always thought was a pretty good part, that believes that society functions better with rules. And it's often kept me from making some very bad decisions, but it also violently reacts to other people breaking social norms and laws. Like, I'm bizarrely rule based for someone who considers themselves.
I was gonna say that's that's like an interesting thing there.
But like that's the thing, is if a rule is in place, like a law in general, whatever, but a rule like don't pass on a blind curve, like that's just for everyone's safety. That's for the good of society. And that to me is a rule that should be followed. That is not to say what I did was excusable. It was.
No, what you did was immature.
I published a Dimspiration the same day that says, I don't believe I'm a maniac, but then sometimes I do things that only a maniac would do, which is kind of a glaring hole in my theory. So anyway, like I found that part, and I talked to it, and I'm going to work to kind of let it exist without being so reactionary, because I feel like it's not a bad part. It just... these firefighters come up. I'm using IFS speak. Anyone who's doing IFS will know what I'm talking about. Everyone else is like, what the fuck? But anyway, a couple other points I want to hit. I lost my wallet a week ago, and for a week I have been just stressed. Even when I wasn't thinking about it, I realized I was carrying all this stress. because we're about to leave on vacation and I don't have a valid driver's license. I don't have any of my credit cards. I don't even have a health insurance card. And so I'm freaking out a little bit. And today was the day that I was going to start the process of applying for a new driver's license and hopefully get a temporary one. And then just rely on all of my Apple wallet so I could pay with my phone wherever possible. But I as a last ditch, I retraced my steps one more time, which I had already done once. But I ended up at Walgreens asking the guy behind the counter if they had a lost and found. And he like calls to the manager and I forgot what my wallet looked like. I was thinking of my previous wallet, which was tan leather. So I described it as a flat tan leather wallet. And they're like, "Ah, what's the name on the ID?" And I'm like, "Well, this is hopeful." And I give him my name and he's like, "Just a sec." And he comes out with my black wallet and it has my ID in it. And looking into it, it's very clearly all the credit cards have been pulled out and it's got like compartments for each card. And all of the cards had clearly been pulled out and shoved back into one compartment, which is weird because the ID is like clearly visible on the outside. But all the cards are there, even my like gift cards for like local restaurants, which could easily have been used by anybody. And I had such a sense of relief. It like I didn't realize until that moment exactly how much stress I was carrying over this, but like it felt like I'm gonna say like a hit of cocaine, like just this like elation in my body that almost tingled. It was very nice. So I'm getting ready for this vacation. So I'm dealing with like meds that would have a refill date right in the middle of my vacation, which makes it like too early to refill before the vacation. And I got to figure out if I can get like a special exception on a couple of these, including my Vyvanse, which is a super sticky one to get an early refill on. So I emailed my doctor, but she takes Fridays off and I might not know until Monday, but I don't leave until next week.
That's good. So. At least. I'm really glad you found your wallet. I'm also glad that like you realize like what your wallet looks like.
Right. Well, this whole time I've been trashing my house and my car looking for it. Because I keep it in this secret pocket on my jeans that's right above my knee and has a zipper on it. Well, at least on the jeans I was wearing that day. And when I realized it was missing, I realized that zipper was down, which in my head only happens when I take the wallet out. And so I must have left it. Like I went to the drive-thru pharmacy and I never would have passed my wallet to them. So I figured it had to have been on the car seat of my car. So I trashed my car looking for it. And I could have been at my desk and needed to like check my health insurance card or something. So I trashed my office looking for it. And I apparently just left the zipper down and it like fell out at Walgreens. Which
man,
is
if that
just
was out of
so
context,
weird.
That line was out of context.
Left my zipper down and it fell out at Walgreens.
I've just decided to hold back a free association story forever. So.
But yeah, I don't know because I paid with my phone at Walgreens, so I got lucky. I'm so glad to have it, but thank you.
Yeah, it's a little piece of us we carry with us that we forget how destabilizing it is when you lose it.
Yeah. Oh, my. I've never lost my wallet before.
That's actually what I'm hearing from you. So for me, I lost my wallet, misplaced my wallet in the house like a week ago. And for me, what happens is I just go a little crazy because I lost something.
Sure.
You know, I'm like, yeah. I should know where this is. It's crazy. Well, yeah. I don't know like, where this is.
My phone, my wallet, and my keys, I never lose. Like, there are three things that I am always conscious of. I, like, every time I stand up, I check my left pocket where my phone is, check my right pocket where my keys and my wallet are. And they never leave my person. And I just, it's, yeah, I felt really destabilized for having lost something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something. Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. I always had like this mantra that I stole from the TV show Broad City that I think how Lincoln says it is slightly different. But in my mind, I always say like phone, wallet, keys, because that would be like a thing that he would always like tell like mm-hmm. Ilana to check before yeah. she would leave. And so I always have them like, okay, phone, wallet, keys. And then sometimes I'll add in like if I'm going on a trip, like phone, wallet, keys, pills, right? Make sure like before I leave, yeah, like on a trip right. that I've got like my meds, that I've got like my phone, my wallet, you know, whatnot. Now I lose sunglasses with surprising frequency.
Sure.
And I'm not talking like cheap sunglasses. I'm talking like $200, $250 sunglasses. I once lost like three pairs of yeah. Ray-Bans in like a 6 week period. It was obscene. It was dumb. And like at that point, and I'd had such a good streak up to that point. I think it'd been years and since I'd lost a pair of Ray-Bans and then, no, I to my knowledge, I've never lost my wallet. I've lost parts of things before. Like I lost my passport card, not my passport. I didn't bother getting it replaced because it was just the passport card. And I was like, fuck it, whatever.
What's a
passport
card?
That is, it looks like a ID, like just looks like a driver's license. And you,
like a global entry
kind of thing? Except it only works in Canada and the US. So it's also sort of pointless. But I had it for a while because I didn't have like a state ID. And so and my state ID was expired because it was from a state that I didn't live in anymore. And so until I got like my ID, I would carry my passport around, but like that's kind of annoying. So I would carry my passport card. I did lose that in 2019 and God, passport renewals right now are such a pain in the ass. I'm still waiting on mine. I like sent in for it forever ago. Digress.
You probably paid for expedited.
Oh, I did.
Too. Expedited is still like a month.
It's more than a month. And the thing is that it's like, I would pay like, do I have to fucking go to San Francisco to go to the fucking consulate to get like a same day thing? Because in New York, at least I could do that. I could pay like $600 and like get it the next day if you needed to. Because somebody would actually like hand walk it to the embassy and like, you know, get your docs back. But the thing is that like Seattle doesn't have an embassy. So the closest consulate is fucking San Francisco. So anyway, I hate this. I fucking hate this state. I hate this town. I hate everything about it. Anyway, I digress. But I mean, I do. I fucking hate living here. I do. That's my mental health corner. I fucking hate Seattle.
You like the Pearl Jam albums aren't even good anymore.
I did not know that. I thought you enjoyed Seattle.
No, I don't. No, I've tried. I've kept it in. I've like tried for 7 years and I fucking hate it. It's a shitty state. It's a shitty city.
Why did you end up there?
Because I got a job.
Why did you end up there? Seven years?
Because I got a job.
Oh yeah, the job. Yeah. Okay, got it. Yeah.
So what's the plan then? It's not, it can't be mentally healthy to live somewhere you fucking hate.
No, but like I'm kind
of use your words. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's rough. I feel for you.
Yeah, extracting yourself from a city is not so easy, unless you're like 22. But you're 29.
Yeah, so but it's just it's expensive.
They won't let you go remote.
No, they would. But I mean, it's not just about me. Like I have other. Anyway, I can't. I don't want to get into all that. But like, yeah. it's not just my decision. So. Oh.
I hate that.
Yeah,
hate
no,
that
but it's a shitty city. It's a shitty city full of shitty people with shitty weather, and expensive as fuck. For not a good city, like you don't have the amenities of an actual city, but you pay actual city prices. It's a fucking shitty place. Seattle fucking sucks.
I think you should take all this to the Chamber of Commerce because it's if they start putting that up on billboards.
Oh, the Chamber
stuff,
of Commerce
doesn't
give a fuck. In fact, Chamber of Commerce or not the Chamber of Commerce, the fucking City Council, the fucking City Council is like so anti anybody who actually gives them money. They're like, oh no, let's create a fucking Uber tax so that every single delivery service has to pay an average of $25 an hour for delivery drivers, which look, I'm all for fair wages and I'm all for like, if you want to set the minimum wage a certain thing, fine. I think it's kind of fucked up that people who who like deliver for DoorDash are getting paid more than like people who like work like in, you know, as like, in you know, a lot of people who have like actual jobs, you know, who work in like medicine and things like that, and are doing things that frankly like take a lot more skill than doing a poor job delivering food. Like, so anyway, and the net result is nobody orders delivery anymore because the prices are so insane. Not to mention the sales tax, not to mention the fact that they like the city sucks. Like they just got rid of the gifted program because of equity. Which all that means is that all the smart kids who are mostly, you know, white or Asian or whatever, you know, people have money, like the families that have money are just going to put their kids in private school. And the smart kids who don't have parents who can send them to private school are like, those kids are fucked. So anyway, this city sucks. That's my mental health corner. Sorry, didn't mean to take yours over, Brett.
I was going to say, I think we did officially segue.
Yeah, I definitely, with your permission, am titling this episode like "Why Seattle Sucks,"
or Seattle.
"Fuck Seattle."
You just generalize, okay. This city sucks. Then everybody comes in wanting to know which city.
There you go.
Winona, Minneapolis, it's
clickbait.
Seattle.
Clickbait, for sure. But Minneapolis, I love. Do you love Minneapolis, Jeff?
I love Minneapolis. Our mayor's a twerp, but I love Minneapolis.
I love Minnesota. I love my city. I love my little town. It hurts my heart to hear that someone has spent 7 years living somewhere that they hate so much.
Well, I didn't always hate it. And like I said, I've tried, right? Like I've tried to like make it better.
Yeah.
But it's a shitty place.
Where would you live if you had a choice? New York, that's easy. I still have dreams that I live in New York again, but the dreams are just that I'm standing on a sidewalk in New York and I'm the happiest person in the world. It's like a nondescript sidewalk.
I've only ever been homeless in New York, but it was still a great city. It was still like one of the best places I've been homeless. Compared to like Baltimore, New York is amazing for homeless people.
A lot of competition in Baltimore. It's a little more like, you got a lot more space in New York to be homeless. You can find your little commune or people or space.
Well, I was fortunate enough to be like part of kind of a punk world that everyone couch surfed, like half the kids there were homeless and you could find a couch to sleep on. In the summer, you could find rooftops that people would let you throw a sleeping bag down. And all the bars offer like free food, even if you're not buying drinks. Not all the bars, but if you know where to go, it's actually a pretty easy place to be. For me, a white male, it was a pretty easy place to be homeless.
You can always find a stinky couch.
Yeah, right? Anyhow. Yeah, okay. Do you have anything else you want to add to your mental health corner, Christina?
Well, the fact that I just went on that unplanned, like unhinged, like rant about how much I fucking hate this city probably means that I need to talk about some of my rage issues with my therapist. It's not even rage issues. It's just I think I've probably been bottling stuff up, frustrations for various things. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's so fascinating to me that I had no idea you didn't like Seattle, which means you have bottled that up for a long time. All right.
Yeah.
Jeff?
Jeff, well, I added to our show notes to follow up on anarchy after we're done with this. I just have a couple of good bits from my life about anarchy. Very short. I've embarked on a writing project and kind of a comprehensive writing project. And as a start for that, I kind of started gathering all of my writing over the years that even have anything related to this topic. And it's like things I've published, things I've written and not published, journal entries, like transcripts of interviews I've done over 15 years and 20 years, maybe. Trainings I've given, all this stuff. And I had it all transcribed. I mean, just did AI transcription. And it was super interesting because like, I basically realized that everything I want to say or that I think I want to address has been, I have said, or written in ways that every time I encounter it, I'm like, oh, that's a good point. I agree with that. Oh, I like how he said that. And so it was really just fun to kind of go through all these years of writing and speaking and just see what has changed and what threads are like common throughout. Like I took whole chunks of stuff from different years and put it through three AIs, through Claude, through Gemini, and through ChatGPT, just to say, like, do a thematic analysis. It's so interesting to see not just the difference between the three of them, but obviously the similarities, but then also the similarities across years. I was like, oh, okay, I've been on this trip for a long time. And so anyway, it's just really, that's been really fun and just a nice way to, my life feels so scattered and my career feels so scattered and higgledy-piggledy, as they say somewhere, that anytime I have like a opportunity where I can actually see kind of a straight line through it, even if it's a curvy thing, like a sine wave, you put the, that always feels really good and makes me feel a little more whole. And so that's been really nice and really fun. And just, yeah, just an unusual experience. And part of how it came to be is that I ended up with a gap in contracts. We've talked about this before, but like I'm a member owner of a collaborative, a research and evaluation collaborative. Until last year, I always had these huge contracts for like 5 years, really great budgets, a lot of room to experiment, create new things and new ways of handling things. And, then that ended last year and I was in the world of small contracts, and that's just not, it's not my gift to manage those things properly, to manage the scope of my efforts inside of them. I invariably burn through my budget when the work's still not done, and then I'm working for free just to complete it. But basically I ended up with six pay period gap where I'm making a sixth my normal income, which is not good. I've been able to claw back some of it by going out for some new contracts. But even that, what was cool about this is that, well, one, I reframed it right away. My wife and I had like a meeting where we're like, okay, so that's this number of dollars that I have to kind of figure out how to fill, because we're already like, things are tight and we've got a kid going to college and we're paying some of that. And we were had this meeting where like, I just created this like narrative of like exactly how much money I'm missing per week and what I need to make up and all this stuff. And at some point in the like depths of it where I'm like, okay, when we come out of this, right now we're just doing the logistics, and we come out of this, it's gonna sting when the reality hits. But then instead of that, I was like, you know what this is? It's a Muppet caper. It's like, they're gonna close the theater down if we don't raise $15,000. Wow, let's go, woo! And like, someone ends up in jail, but like Yul Brynner's the jailer, you know? And like, and so once I framed it that way, both of us, and my wife tends to be way more, she can get way more kind of anxious about money than I can, for better and for worse. all of a sudden we were like, oh, that's great. This is delightful. And I went about the work of like finding new stuff. What was great about the opportunity in the end, I mean, I'm in it, very much in it, is like, it allowed me to shake loose from really what was kind of a work rut. And like, I got really burned out on my juvenile justice project. And then I just took a lot of contracts that were just doing the kind of work that like, wasn't that exciting to me. There was no room. I really like to create, and there was just no room to create. It was just like, right, get it done. And I was like, I don't want to die like this. Like, I'm 49. I've like managed to stay in a place where like, I'm basically doing something I really care about and I'm passionate about with a team of people. We talked about this a couple episodes ago, but like with a team of people, I really just like feel a sort of like soldier's bond with. And so all of a sudden that was over and I was like, oh, this is great. I can just sit here and think about the things that I like to do, the things that I'm good at, and get out of this thing where I'm saying yes to things I'm good at, but don't like doing. And it's a huge privilege to be in that situation, but I will mind you, I'm on unemployment. So like it's a qualified privilege, right? But it really opened me up. And one of the things was just wanting to do some writing. And so now finally I'm kind of like doing that. So it's like a blessing. The Muppet Caper is a little bit of a blessing, but I haven't ended up in jail yet. So that's,
well, that's good. You know, cause like that's the one part of the Muppet Caper that like, you know, when Fozzie and Kermit wind up in jail, You know, like that's always one of those moments you're like, oh God, you know, who's going to have to bail them out?
Who? I think I know the answer for all of you, but who would you rather be in jail with, Fozzie or Kermit?
Fozzie.
Probably. Actually, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, Fozzie probably, because Kermit would be super anxious. Kermit would be super anxious, and that would make me anxious, and you don't, like, that's just not good. But Fozzie could be kind of annoying.
But I am Fozzie.
Yeah, me too.
that's what I realized. I thought I was going to choose Fozzie, and I was like, I fucking am Fozzie. We're never getting out of there.
Fozzie is clearly ADD, and, like, the way I relate, especially in a captive situation, I relate best to people that think quickly over like the surface without diving deep. And Kermit would want to dive deep.
Now I'm going to tell you, I don't know who I pick between them. I tell you who I would really want. I'd want to be there with Gonzo.
Also ADHD.
But he's like the good ADHD. Like Fozzie is like he's the ADHD, which would be useful in jail. Like Fozzie's the type who's going to make the joke at the wrong person. Like the wrong Muppet. He's going to make the joke to the wrong Muppet, and it's going to become a whole thing. Whereas Gonzo is going to have some good awareness. He's going to know the lay of the land. He's going to maybe be able to have a scheme of things. Gonzo's who you want. Kermit, I think, yeah, Kermit's too anxious. Kermit's going to your point. Yeah.
But here's my argument. If we're only choosing Toad, Fozzie and Kermit, my argument for Kermit is that there's a show title in here somewhere. My argument for Kermit is that you need someone that's small enough that you can push them through the bars. Right. If you have a plan, or the little hole you're able to dig. But also Kermit you never suspect Kermit, right? Like if you could get Kermit on board with some kind of scheme, he could definitely get you out of there.
Here's my follow-up question for you. Do you realistically think that you could convince Kermit to like go along with your scheme? Because that's my big thing. Like you're right on all that. If you can convince him to go along with you, no one's going to suspect him. He's going to be able to get through the bars. He's going to be meek. He'll be a great patsy. Can you actually convince him to do that?
But no one will suspect him because no one would believe that Kermit would be willing to break the law or do a jailbreak.
Here's the scenario where that works. You're like a year in, which you don't want. Never happens in the Muppet movies. My version of this is it's just overnight, you know.
Right.
But if you're in for a year, you could definitely at some point be like, yo, dude, you know, we could get out of this. And Kermit would be like, I'm listening.
So the argument would be you could do more for society if you weren't in this prison. Like you could.
Well, Miss Piggy has to be in there too as a carrot.
Yeah. Is she a carrot or is she a deterrent? How do they feel? Because like I've actually.
That's true. Oh yeah. Right. Because he's smothered.
So I had this realization with a friend. We were talking. I'm not even shitting you. We were genuinely talking about Miss Piggy and Kermit like 5 days ago. And I think the context was Taylor Swift. I'm not going to lie. But it was because somebody on TikTok did some sort of Muppet mashup thing. And then I realized, I was like, we were all as kids like taught to believe that she sucks and she's the worst. And now I look back and I'm like, he's such a fucking asshole. He hates her. He doesn't want to be with her. He leads her on. She loves him so much. And he's a fucking coward. Like, fuck Kermit, honestly.
You belong in jail, Kermit.
Coward. I would put coward before asshole.
Both, right?
Because but he gets like railroaded and he doesn't have the balls to make her
just
stop.
Just be honest.
He doesn't have the balls to just say,
But I think make her stop. I don't like that framing because I think that it like,
okay, so I think we're saying the same thing, but like if he was clear, if he was honest with her in a way that he's too scared to be, if he were honest, she could make the decision to stop pursuing him. And that's
I agree, but I also think it's an asshole-ish thing to say, you know, someone so into you and you're a coward and you won't do it and you lead them on. And you don't like, that's an asshole thing to do. You know, someone's like desperately in love with you and you're too much of a chicken shit to step up and do it. You're a fucking piece of shit if you do that. Like genuinely, like fine, be scared or whatnot. But like, that's the most selfish, self-centered thing you can do. If you know someone feels about you a way that you don't feel about them and you refuse to tell them that because of your own cowardice, you're a fucking dick, like male or woman. We are. I just, the only, my only quibble was make her stop. Cause I don't think that it's on her to stop. I think it's on him to make it clear. I'm not into you. Right. Like she's only doing what, like, you know, she's doing what she's doing, but like, she's like, he's making the decision to continue to go out with her and to be with her. So.
You know what this is? Wait, you know what this is?
Difference.
This is, I'm just picturing this awesome thing where it's Christina and Kermit are in jail together and you're just giving him this lecture, you know, like, I love that so much. And by the way, here's the thing we're not factoring in. I was thinking limited, like it's just Fozzie and Kermit or it's us or one of them. But then you got to remember that over at the jailer's desk are all the other Muppets. Right. Like, and that's a beautiful feeling. And that kind of is why the Muppet Caper felt good in general. It's like, no matter how crazy everybody is, you've always
got
the whole crew.
They're all going to show up. Like,
they're all going to show up. Yeah.
And Jeff, if we have more options than just Kermit and Fozzie, Jeff, you are Gonzo, not Fozzie.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm saying of the two of them, I'm Fozzie, but I'm definitely Gonzo. Yeah, I love Gonzo so much. I mean, it's probably
given
Gonzo,
all the options,
Gonzo,
right? Given all the options, I still think I'm probably Fozzie. I'm the guy who loves stupid jokes, who makes them at inappropriate
times.
That's
true. That's a good point. That is you. You're Fozzie. Christina, what are you? Like, if you had to self-identify as any Muppet. I'm
trying to think.
Who's the stoner chick?
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say
she's great with the braids.
I was gonna say that I kind of began to.
Yeah,
exactly. That's probably
amazing.
Her name, I don't remember ever even hearing her name. She was just kind of
she hangs out with
the band girl. She's creepy. She's great. Yeah.
Saxophone dude would know all the people.
No, that's what I think. Like, just like I know, like who are the see, now I'm just thinking Muppet Babies. Who are the twins? I don't even remember if they were like actual like Muppet characters.
Muppet Babies.
There was Scooter and he had a sister. But she might have only been created for Janice is who we were thinking of.
Yep.
Janice. That's right.
Now that you say it, I absolutely have heard her name. Yes.
Yeah. You know what else you need is the Rolodex of saxophone guy. Not that he has a Rolodex. He's got a big old like bunch of papers spilling out of his wallet with the names of exactly the kind of people you need to get out of jail.
Skeeter. Scooter's twin sister is Skeeter.
Okay.
Skeeter.
And okay, yeah. Now I would also say Scooter kind of has a thing too, because doesn't he heckle? I'm one of the hecklers. Like
you're in the peanut gallery? I love those two. God, I love those two.
Waldorf.
They're the best.
Oh, I can't remember their names. Statler and Waldorf.
Yeah.
Is that their name? You know what's funny? I don't think I ever realized their names and I was in love with them. I mean, it was just what that layer of the show gives you. Right.
Oh, it's so good.
They're also like, what did people say about Han Solo? Like, he's the character in Star Wars that's looking at the whole movie and he's a stand-in for you going like, when it's stupid, you're like, he's like, this is stupid. And I feel like those guys are the ones that allow you to pull out of just a wackadoodle world of the Muppets and be like, no, actually, this is crazy. I love it.
Have I ever told you, like, I grew up in a house, we were only allowed to listen to classical music. Mm-hmm. And then my parents let me get a little like record player, suitcase record player, and I got a Muppet Babies Rocket to the Moon record.
Nice.
And that was the first time I had heard rock and roll.
That's the devil's
music. I'm like maybe 5 years old and had never heard just like a backbeat before. And all of a sudden I hear Rocket to the Moon and it opened my eyes to all of the music that I love today. Was inspired by Muppet Babies.
That's
Rocket
amazing.
To the Moon.
I mean, honestly, like Jim Henson, I am so mad that like he didn't just fucking go to the doctor for his pneumonia and that he died so young, because like between
Yeah, he died.
He was sick, and like if he'd gone to the fucking doctor, like they would have been able to, like, because he was sick for like a while, like a week or two, and like if he'd gone to the fucking doctor, like it became a bacterial infection and killed him. And if he'd gone to the fucking doctor, like he would have been fine, but he didn't. So it was like really sad. That was like my first like celebrity death. I was like 5 or 6, and I like had the People magazine that he was on the cover of with Kermit, like for like my whole life.
Yeah, I remember.
And but that was like. Yeah. Devastating for me because Sesame Street was like my first fandom, and by extension the rest of like the you know extended Muppet universe, yeah, like they did great shit, like they were really genuinely punk in a way that was fun, and like it was
they were so good.
And then you had like the mishmash between like the genuine like Children's Television Workshop stuff, which was about like teaching preschoolers, but then you have like the adult oriented but still safe for all ages like Muppet Show and kind of, you know, the mishmash in between, and like you have like these genuinely like hippie kind of like punk guys, you know, like being fucking puppeteers and but so cool and genuinely.
And what's like the amazing universal truth you learn from the Muppets in 5 minutes is everybody's messy.
Yeah, everybody's messy. Everybody's a little bit of a monster. Like it's great. I have to say, like the highlight like of my like life was I got to meet Carol Spinney, who was Big Bird and Oscar. Ooh, and I got to like basically like I had just come off of a red eye plane. So I like literally like I'd flown from San Francisco to New York, and then I didn't even go home. Like I went straight to the office, and they had a closed set because he was there. Amazing. And they were kind enough to let me come and meet him. And I sobbed like a freaking baby with that man. I was like, thank you for my childhood.
I bet.
I also met the guy who played Bert at a different occasion. I had like a similar experience. I didn't cry quite as hard, and he wasn't even my Bert. Like he was not my Bert.
But he so many episodes. Right?
He was like kind of a, I think like an assistant for, you know, the My Bert. But he took over the role like in the, mid 90s, and, nicest guy, like nicest guy. Everybody I met associated with Sesame Street was great. And obviously the Muppet crew is very closely related to all of that. So, you know,
yeah. Do you know that Big Bird was supposed to be on the Challenger space shuttle that exploded?
No.
What?
I put a link in the show notes. I only learned this. I learned this from watching For All Mankind, the Apple TV show.
Like,
but I looked it up, and the thing that this is what's so goofy. So the thing that saved him was that the costume is too big. But here's two things about that. One, did it have to be Carol Spinney? Like, I feel like, I mean, it makes sense, but like, but then also you can't just like find someone that was smaller. The point was the symbol of Big Bird, but Jesus, there's no thank God because
Christopher
died.
Well, she was a teacher.
And there's no thank God to this.
But
just imagine this alternate history with Big Bird, actual Carol Spinney Big Bird.
But for those of us who are like in second grade,
I was in six
at the time. Yeah, that makes sense. Like I was, it was surreal to me. Like our class had it running. We had the TV in the classroom, and like the tragedy happens, and it was surreal. If you had said that Big Bird had also died in that, it would have hit home in a way.
I was going to say it's already one of the most tragic things. I was too little. I was 2 when that happened. And so I don't have any memory of it. What is fucked up is that when they had another, like the next space shuttle launch or whatever, which took place, I think in like 89 or something, they show that in school, which in retrospect, I'm like, why would you do this a second time? Right. Like you already knew what happened.
Right,
cause like the thing that's heartbreaking about like what happened with you, Brett, and it happened with my sister too. Like they all watched it in school. Like the whole thing is they sent a teacher to space and she went through the training program and all that. And the woman who was her alternate actually then went through the full space program and like became an actual astronaut and actually did orbit and go on, you know, a number of missions. And she was inspired to do that because of what had happened. And she'd been also a teacher. But like, because they'd had a teacher in space, like that's why it was a thing where like everybody was watching, you know, not just the family, but like her class, like all little kids, like they, because the whole thing, I mean, and that was also sort of the tragedy. They pushed for them to go when the conditions weren't good and the rocket boosters were frozen because of all the fucking publicity. Because they were like, we can't lose this again. We already had to cancel once. We can't do this again. It's too important. We got to go. And like nobody fucking cared about the fact that, like, you know, okay, because it's one thing when, not to say that it's ever okay when there are space disasters, but like it's a little bit different when it's a civilian involved, right? Like I think that it's like
Yeah, you came up through the military. Otherwise, right. You're like you're deep into.
You know that there is a big risk, right? You know that this is not like getting on an airplane. But that's not how they sold it to civilians or to the public. And then they didn't do the work. There are two great things on that. There's the Netflix, like there's like a 3-part documentary on the Challenger thing. But there was a made for TV movie that the BBC and I think the Discovery Channel like joint ventured called let me find this. It was a narrative thing, the Challenger disaster. That goes into a lot of the details with that. And, cause Richard Feynman like led the board that did the investigation that basically, you know, castigated them and called them into account. And it turned out this only came out after she died, but Sally Ride had been one of, the informants, that got like, him a lot of like the inside papers about how many things NASA like rejected and whatnot. And it's one of those things where like, it's not a conspiracy. Like there's actual like documented stuff of all the fucked up shit they did. The reason I say not a conspiracy is because some of the stuff that you see, you know, that the government did, like it does almost seem like fake. You're like, there's no way that they would make these decisions. Oh no, they did. And it's, this is one of the reasons why I kind of have a hard time, I guess, like defending the US space program. Like I'm fine if honestly I'm okay if private companies want to do space exploration. But I'm kind of like, I don't know if people are like, oh, we need to give NASA all this funding. And I'm like, do we? Cause honestly, like as an organization between that and Columbia, like there are, you know, massive histories of them just not doing due diligence or giving a fuck or doing the right things. And yet they've been given, you know, trillions of dollars over, you know, 60 years. So like, I don't know, like, do we actually need to pursue like, you know, space stuff? Like it's great and it's a great scientific thing, but I'm also kind of like the government really has fucked up a lot. So
I think things like the James Webb telescope are more important than going back to the moon. Like I don't know what we gain. I'm sure there are reasons that they want to get back to the moon, but I don't know them. All I know is like James Webb telescope, I guess, like what we're reliving the space race again. But
no, I agree with you.
Like the James Webb telescope is providing so much more interesting and useful, like in the field of astrophysics, the amount of information we're gathering about the beginning of the fucking universe. Is more important to me than
I completely agree. Rocks. And that like I think is like where the funding should go. And I guess maybe probably to go back on what I was just arguing, there's probably an argument to make that you can't get the funding for that unless you have like the pomp and circumstance of the space stuff, which fair. But I also still feel like, you know, what if
it were a mission to Mars? Would you be interested in that?
Yes, but again, like I think that's a completely different thing, right? And I think that's one of those things where, you know, now that the technology is what it is, like it would be such a long time before we would do a manned mission. Like we would be doing unmanned things and whatnot, right? Versus like when they'd sent, you know, the Challenger, you know, in 86 or whatever to go, like what we were doing, the only reason they did it was because they wanted to send civilians into space. Like there was nothing they were getting of value out of that mission, and the shuttle was already not, you know, it was already kind of like not doing super well, and there were some problems with how it was designed. But like I think eventually a manned, you know, mission to Mars 1000% would be in favor of looking at that. But
sure,
like I'm not as anti private companies getting into some of this, because I'm like, A, let them pay for some of it and do some of the, take on some of the risk and whatnot. And B, I'm just kind of like, I'm with you. Like, I'd rather spend our budgets on telescopes and, you know, rovers than
if,
oh, we've got to go back to the moon. Fuck if, off.
If Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos want to tomorrow launch themselves on a manned mission to Mars, I'm all in. Fucking go for it. It'll be, what was that submersible
yeah,
that
yeah, exactly. Well, the except it wouldn't be, because they would be, sadly, I think they'd be smarter than that, right? Like, with the submersible thing, what we wound up learning was that the foremost expert in that entire field, like in the entire world, is James fucking Cameron. Yeah, like genuinely, yeah. Like that man knew more than anybody else. Like, and then, and he was smart enough to not, well, not smart enough. I mean, I'm sure there were legal and other requirements, but like he didn't talk about it until they officially confirmed that it had exploded underwater, and that that was the sounds they were hearing were not people knocking, but you know, that it had already perished, and he'd already known that. So he then like got a hotel room and like just did a media blitz, like talking to every single like television outlet and newspaper and explaining how all this works. And you realize, oh, okay, this is a rich guy, but he's actually also genuinely the foremost expert in how these things work. And when he outlined just like how badly that whole thing was from the get-go, you're just like, holy shit, like this is dumb.
He's like, I watched Leo die.
Exactly.
Just a quick thing, because I know we got to get Taylor. And I just want to say two greatest songs about the space program, Whitey on the Moon by Gil Scott-Heron, The Commander Thinks Aloud by The Long Winters, which is a song that still makes me...
Oh, I haven't heard that.
Oh, so before you... I mean, listen to it, but if you want, listen to the song Exploder first, because it's an unbelievable introduction to that song. I put it in already, and I put the link in.
Oh, okay.
But the song is truly a song that I get goosebumps and tears every time I hear it. Incredible. Whereas Whitey on the Moon, I'm just like,
Do you want to quick hit your anarchy follow-up?
Oh, it's so quick.
Before we do this fucking Taylor.
I was reminded of a quote from a Believer article I read like 15 years ago, and I went and looked it up, and it's this guy in a pacifist commune in like Denmark, and he says, anarchy is a beautiful thing if people have very fucking high morals.
Yeah.
And then the other bit is like, I sometimes think I'm not an anarchist, but I definitely like modeling ways that where we don't have to rely on the authorities that our lack of high fucking morals make possible. I mean, it's so much more complex than that, right? But like, I have this thing where like, if there are kids walking down the street at night trying doors on our cars, first of all, I generally believe that it's like a unwritten contract. If you leave your door unlocked, it might get messed with. I know that's a very controversial feeling. So I usually go to the window and I just whistle happy sounds, and then they run off because they're very confused. But last night I woke up and I could have sworn I was hearing someone downstairs like banging around or something. And, you know, I'm just too old at this point to grab whatever highly insufficient weapon is nearby and like charge down the stairs. And so instead I put my iPhone and I put Welcome to the Jungle on as loud as possible on the kitchen HomePod. Because I just felt like if that came on and I was breaking into a house, I would get the fuck out of there. Because I don't know, is this like the, you know, like the WWF, like walk-up music? Like what's happening, right?
Right.
So I put it really loud. And then after a little bit, I just backed it down real slow. And I watched my Ring camera to see if I flushed anyone out. But it was the wind.
So I will say that with age, a lot of my anarchist ideals have tarnished, faded. But I do believe that a lot of crime would be solved by giving people basic things like healthcare, a universal living wage. It just reduced the poverty level. A lot of the things that people are like, oh, people are awful and no one, like we could never sustain this. If everyone were comfortable, I think it's a slightly different story. I don't want to get into it. I don't mean
discussion. Yeah.
But yeah, okay, let's hear about Taylor news.
Yeah, walk us through what this means to you. We know it's like a cultural thing, because it's she's a cultural thing. Holy shit, still happening. Now we're getting the saturation articles. You knew it was coming.
Yes, like clockwork.
It's the laziest kind of journalism.
The absolute laziest. When the New York Times is literally quoting tweets and TikToks, like in their article about is she overexposed? You know, like, I'm like, really? Okay, so
okay, so you've been waiting on this thing. It lands. Tell us about your relationship to this thing.
Girl needs to go to therapy, but I am so fucking glad she doesn't. Like, she famously like told the New York, well, not maybe famously, but like she told Rolling Stone and last time she did an interview with him that she's like, no, I've never done therapy. And like, I don't need to, or maybe she didn't say I don't need to, but she was like,
she's like, I've gotten really rich off of
that. Well, I mean, therapy. Maybe that's like, you know, I don't think is that. No, well, I know. Although it was funny because I made a joke on Twitter about that, and I had people who totally didn't understand the joke, and people were like, no, everyone needs therapy, no matter who they are. And I'm like, you completely missed the point. And then you had other people who was like, well, she's clearly doing it because she makes money off of it. I'm like, fuck off. I'm not saying that. I'm saying, like, if you look at the lyrics on this album, like, it is unhinged. Like she is like unhinged on Maine. Like she is like sharing shit that like you should never share in public about the things that she's feeling.
And if I'm not mistaken, she had basically already decided not to release this, or she just, you know, she had a chance. It was back in the queue, right?
No. This was just one that she claims, but she's a liar. She claims she's been working on this for 2 years, and I don't know. Maybe instrumentals and things have been already percolating. I think most, based on the subject matter, most of this came together between August and, you know, when this album was released. So, because almost all the songs, like, it's okay. So a few things. First, she announces the album and it's a surprise. And we're all like, what? And it's called the Tortured Poets Department. And we're like, oh, is that a dig at your ex-boyfriend, Joe Alwyn, who, you know, was part of a group chat that was called like the Tortured Men's, you know, department or something. No.
Nah, no relationship.
No, it actually turns out not so much. Yeah, actually kind of, because turns out I think he gets one, maybe two songs on the album, which, oh, also, there are 31 songs. She released one album at, you know, midnight Eastern time. And then there was like four different bonus tracks on different vinyl variants, because she does that insanity and Greed, which I participate in, so I'm guilty of it, but it is too much, Taylor. Like, honestly, you need to stop. But then at 2 a.m. she announces, 11 p.m. my time, she's like, oh, by the way, I actually made this a double album, here are 15 more tracks.
So it's like a 2 hour gap.
Yeah, but the whole thing is 31 songs in 2 hours and 5 minutes. It is a lot of Taylor.
So before anyone even had a chance to finish listening to the first album,
you'd listen to it and you're absorbing it. You're trying to figure out what this is about, right? Because you're still absorbing it, it's been an hour between maybe if you started listening and stopped. You've had like an hour, but you're still absorbing it. You still don't know exactly what you heard. Plenty of people have gone to bed, which, fair, right? And then she's just like, no, here's 50 more songs. Insanity. But the thing is, and this is why I kind of love this record, it's received, I would say it's been polarizing, the reception. I actually really like it, for a lot of reasons. I think that sonically it's very much in the vein of Evermore and Folklore, with some of the kind of synth sensibilities from Midnights. I didn't really like Midnights as a record, her last record. I liked the 3 a.m. tracks, and I liked like the lead single Antihero, and I liked the song Mastermind, but a lot of the songs I didn't connect with me, because it didn't totally feel authentic. It felt like, and now I think it comes through, that's probably exactly what it was, but it felt like I was like, I don't know, man, like this just feels like she's holding something back. She's not maybe being like the Taylor we know and love. This is much more in my sonic wheel game, because it is, again, very much like Folklore and Evermore, which I love and read. It's a heartbreak album. It's an angry album. Like, she's fucking pissed. She is so mad on so many of the songs, which is great. But again, it's like the unhinged mental illness. Like, she's just not even holding back, which is kind of remarkable, because like, just as an artistic statement, you have the most famous person in the entire world who's, yes, known for diaristic content and whatnot, And she's obviously played into this, but like everybody's for years trying to figure out like, who are these songs about? And then she plays coy, which is bullshit because she feeds into it too. But like, you know, she's tried to kind of be like, oh, I'm not going to tell you who it's about, or I'm going to try to limit this. And then she even released some albums, which she claimed were, you know, largely fictional in this album.
And the poor three candidates who it is not about, when she doesn't say who it's about, they're like, I don't think this is Travis Kelce's. Like, everything's
exactly
fine.
In this case, though, there's really no question. The majority of the songs are about Mattie Healy from the 1975, who she was in a relationship with for like a month. But apparently, based on the text, and by this case, I mean, you know, the lyrics and whatnot, that's what I'm referring to as the text. The text implies they'd been, well, we all knew that they fucked in 2014. We all knew that. But it seems they probably were texting and friendly and like had a flirtation while she was still with this other guy. And then by the time she broke up with that guy and she got together with Mattie Healy, like he went full on where he was like, oh, I'm so into you. I love you. This is great and whatnot. And then he kind of got canceled while he was with her. She didn't care, which she says as much, like literally in the lyrics. She's like, fuck all of you fans who are telling me who to date. Like there's a line where she says, you know, like my name is mine to destroy or something like that. I need to find it. The lyrics on this, some of them probably like the New York Times says she needs an editor. That's not wrong. At the same time,
it also means nothing.
This is true, but also I love that she didn't have an editor because genuinely, like. This is in some ways what's kind of remarkable, like I said, is she's not being coy at all. Like everything is incredibly, incredibly like transparent about like what this stuff is about. And like she just goes off. Like she admits she was like, you know, like I you know, made me want to die. Like I wanted to kill myself because like for you know, because of what you did to me. Like it's just like it's a lot. It's really, really, I love it for just that alone.
Here's a question it raises for me. If you inspire 2 hours of hateful verses, are you still a muse? Do muses, does that count as a muse? Like, could he say like, I'm her muse. I am right now her muse.
I believe the word. Okay.
This was the lyric I wanted to say. I'll tell you something right now. I'd rather burn my whole life down than listen to one more second of all this bitching and moaning. I'll tell you something about my good name. It's mine alone to disgrace. I don't cater to all these vipers dressed in empath's clothing. And then she has a song that is very clearly about Mattie Healy called The Smallest Man Who Ever Lived, which is the angriest song she's ever put out. Like it's way worse than Dear John, which I didn't think was possible. Let me just find this. Were you sent by someone who wanted me dead? Did you sleep with a gun underneath our bed? Were you writing a book? Were you a sleeper cell spy? In 50 years, will this all be declassified? And you'll confess why you did it, and I'll say good riddance, because it wasn't sexy once it wasn't forbidden. I would have died for your sins. Instead, I just died inside. And you deserve prison, but you won't get time. You'll slide into inboxes and slip through the bars. You crashed my party and your rental car. You said
an abolitionist.
You said normal girls were boring and you were gone by the morning. You kicked out the stage lights, but you're still performing. But to, like, I would have died for your sins. Instead, I just died inside, and you deserve prison, but you won't get time. Like, holy fucking shit.
Jeez. What is the great Nico Case line? The next time you say forever, I will punch you in your face.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like we're in that territory.
Are. Like, it's like, it is basically, we all thought it was going to be Fuck Joe Alwyn, the album. No, it's not. Like, he, I think, gets two tracks and it's relatively private as the relationship was. And most of this is just, she got taken for a ride. She even says in one of the things, like, I should have seen this coming. You know, I should have known better. But like, girl went through it and then just decided, yeah, fuck it. Again, rather than go to therapy, I'm just going to release a 2-hour and 5-minute album and get it all out on Maine and make no pretenses about who this is about. Like, I have no idea how she's going to like incorporate some of this into our tour.
So what do you think the album about Travis will be like?
So he did get it.
I mean, he's obviously going to hurt
No,
her.
She's probably going to get it for him.
She seems to.
And sports metaphors are so, so bad.
And her, okay, and she already has a few. So she has a song about him called So High School, which is sort of sweet, but the lyrics are not some of the best.
It's a warning shot to him. It's just like a shot.
No, it's not. It's not. It's a sweet.
I don't even hate
yet. No, it's a sweet song. Here's the thing. I think Travis Kelce, I think she's going to hurt him. I think he's going to be a Taylor Lautner who gets like a back to December style song. Because the thing is, she has terrible taste in men. She likes assholes. She really, really likes assholes.
I thought you would fight me on that if I said it. Like, just it seems to me like I don't know anything about Travis Kelce. Is it?
I saw him drunk after the Super Bowl. The second saw him drunk at that like trophy ceremony, I was like, oh, this guy's a fucking problem.
But I know from her history that she chooses. It's almost like she chooses guys she will eventually write songs about.
I think it's just maybe. Muses. I think she's attracted to a certain type of guy.
Anti-muse.
Like, who, you know, is probably not going to be into her the same way that they're, you know, that she's into them, to be honest. This is kind of how I read it. Anyway, like...
Could it be that she's a super intense partner?
This is my point. I think you're absolutely right. I think that she's a whole fucking lot. Like, through, like, on this album. So one of my favorite tracks on the album is the second track. It's the title track, The Tortured Poets Department. And it's kind of, you know, thinking about, like, talking about kind of, like, the early days of their relationship and whatnot. And, but also a little bit, I think, kind of written, like, after it was over. The bridge is really great. Sometimes I wonder if you're going to screw this up with me, but you told Lucy you'd kill yourself if I ever leave. And I had said that to Jack about you. So I felt seen. Everyone we know understands why it's meant to be, because we're crazy.
How'd she get a hold of my 11th grade journal?
Totally. Like,
that's mine.
No, totally. But even put that out there that it's like, no, I felt seen.
Yeah.
I too would kill myself without you. And you're like, oh my God, girl, chill. But also thank you for not, like, thank you so much for never going to therapy. Thank you so much for giving us this very public dissection of a relationship that the public hated. And she basically tells them, we hate you. We hate you, but I hate you for, like,
if she goes to therapy, it's going to be like Bob Dylan's evangelical Christian phase.
No. Yeah. Taylor, stay away. Never go to therapy. Never do it.
I don't know. Like, listening to that stuff, all I can think is she could solve this.
Of course.
With a little therapy, with a little internal work. Like, and that makes it hard for me to listen to it when all I can think of is grow up.
No, and you're not wrong.
Therapy.
And that might not be for you. I think that, like, sonically, like, I think you would actually like the album because you liked Folklore and Evermore. And Aaron Dessner does a lot of the tracks.
I would say the back half
especially is going to be more your bag. Although I do like some of the Jack Antonoff songs. There is this song that she has called I Can Do It With a Broken Heart that is kind of upbeat, but it's going to become if they release this as a single, it's going to be a hit. We're all going to hear it everywhere. But I relate to it very, very much. Like, the whole conceit of the song is that she's listening to stuff inside her ear as she's performing on the Eras tour. And the whole thing is basically like, I can do my job. I can do this whole Taylor Swift thing, even when I'm suffering, even when, like, I'm in pain, even when I want to die. I can still make it look like everything is fine. And like the pre-chorus because I'm a real tough kid, I can handle my shit. They said, babe, you gotta fake it till you make it, and I did. Lights, camera, bitch, smile, even when you wanna die. He said he'd love me for all his life. It goes on from there. But then the chorus is, I'm so depressed I act like it's my birthday. Every day. I'm so obsessed with him, but he avoids me like the plague. I cry a lot, but I am so productive. It's an art. You know you're good when you can even do it with a broken heart. And
I was really hoping the heart was right.
That would have been great. That would have been good. But no,
she could
but I personally, like, as somebody who is incredibly good at appearing fine when I'm absolutely not. I'm like, oh no, this is going to be like my new like go to like before you go do something you feel like you want to die song.
Yeah.
Not healthy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I stepped on that because you were landing the thing that you're saying is like.
Oh yeah, no,
I put fart in there, but it's like
broken heart part. Like,
thanks,
no, but like, but thanks, like the line, like I'm so depressed, I act like it's my birthday every day. I'm like, that's so
feeling it.
But yeah, no, I mean, but I hear you, Brett. She could solve so many things with therapy, but I'm personally glad for the art that she doesn't. Also, she has enough resources. Well, I mean, I have a feeling the reason she probably doesn't have a therapist is she's like, can I trust anyone? And it's like, girl, just pay someone $1 million a year to be your therapist and your therapist only.
Well, I mean, to be honest, putting out the song she puts out is therapeutic 1,000%. On its own. And I have a feeling she works through a lot of problems. It's just that she goes and repeats.
Right. Well, that's the thing, right?
That's what's
frustrating. And she even says, like, she said, I think so. The final song is called on this very long album. It's called The Manuscript, and it's actually a great song. And one of the final things is the only thing that's left is the manuscript. One last souvenir from my trip to your from my trip to your shoes. Now and then I reread the manuscript, but the story isn't mine anymore. And like that's kind of like what she's always said is that like the songs start out as hers, and then once she performs them and puts them into the world, they become everyone else's, and then other people can interpret them. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. Like she works through this stuff, and like, you know, she used to cry performing All Too Well live, like during the Red Tour. Now she does a 10-minute version of that, like every night, and like the entire crowd screams this very, very sad, like torturing, amazing, like her best song ever, far and away. I think the 5-minute version is better than the 10-minute, but regardless, like it's her best work. And like the whole crowd literally screams for 10 minutes every single lyric, and like everybody in the audience is feeling it, and it's an amazing experience. But like at this point, there's no way she thinks about Jake Gyllenhaal when she sings that, right? Like she's, you know, thinking about the audience, and
it's
not her song anymore.
It's not her song.
And everybody relates to it so much because it's like this perfect song about like being 21 and having your heart broken like devastatingly for the first time. But it will be interesting to see how she performs these. It's too long. She couldn't do a tour just of this album. It's also too depressing and it's too angry, but I'm curious to see like what song she does perform as a, you know, if she brings this set into the Eras tour. I have a feeling she will, but I do feel like
all the lights go out and it's just a single red spot.
Yeah. I mean, or just like, because again, like the anger in some of these songs is just like so like stark. Like there's another song called like Who's Afraid of Little Old Me, where she goes after her favorite villain, where she does her favorite thing where she's Taylor Swift, the victim. I'm rolling my eyes, but it is what she does. And then she goes after the media, which it's like, okay, I get it. But also, you know, but I love her, but she, it's this fucking angry. It's so angry. And it's like, it's unhinged. It's great. So I've talked enough about this. I do actually think, you'll like, especially like if you listen, like I say, like track, like, 9 through like 24, Brett, I think. The whole thing is 31 songs. If you just go like, I might like make you a playlist like of songs I think Brett will like.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
I can do that.
I would appreciate
that. I'll do that too.
Even if
I'll do it.
Brett.
I'll do it.
Awesome.
All right. Do we have time for Graptitude or does everyone need to get going?
I'm okay, but I also.
No, go on.
Oh, go ahead, Christina.
I do.
Do you have time? I would love Brett for just a quick bit on Conductor.
Yes.
Before we do.
Oh, sure. I'd love to. I published a project on Thursday, that is, so my app Marked, which is for previewing Markdown files and it updates every time you save, et cetera, it has the ability to handle custom processors. And that makes it possible to, instead of it's built in, it has multi-markdown and discount built in. But if you wanted to use, say, Pandoc or Cramdown, you can do that with the custom.
Wait, has that always been true with the Pandoc thing? Yeah. Or is that, that's not what, always. Fuck me. Okay.
So, like you've always been able to specify one custom preprocessor that happens before the markdown conversion where you can for example, Wikilinks, you could turn Wikilinks into links back to whatever application
right.
you were creating them in. And then the processor, which would actually convert the markdown or whatever ASCII doc, whatever you needed into HTML. But you were only allowed one. And if you wanted multiples, you would have to keep changing your custom pre/processor. So I built this thing called Conductor, which serves as you just set your custom processor to Conductor. And then with a YAML file, you can create conditions like text contains this string, or text contains this regex, or extension is this, or path contains this. It even has tree contains, which you can use to search for the existence of a subdirectory or file in any parent directory of the current file, which for testing if you're in an Obsidian vault, Obsidian puts a .obsidian folder in the root of the vault. So if you put tree contains .obsidian, it will find that in any parent directory, no matter how many subdirectories deep you are, it'll find the .obsidian directory and let you know that you're in an Obsidian vault. And then I recently did a pull request side note that got accepted to a full-on Obsidian to marked preprocessor. And now it can create like links. It can turn your wiki links into links back to Obsidian documents, and it can handle tags and everything. So anyway, Conductor makes it easy to branch. It's train conductor. The idea is like a train conductor. Yeah. And they're called tracks, and you can set up tracks and you can nest tracks and you can use Booleans and you can create basically 100 different processors based on the content that Marked is loading.
That's amazing.
And it will always use the correct processor if you write your predicates well. It solves, like, I've always meant to add like a whole Xcode style multiple processors with predicates and everything, but I get bogged down every time I try to implement it. So this is my alternative. And you don't have to know scripting. You could just have, if this file exists in this folder, then run it through Pandoc with these arguments. Or if this file contains YAML that has comments are true, then run it through Cramdown. You don't have to write a single script. All you have to do is edit a YAML in natural language.
That's awesome. So that's Conductor. That's so cool. So do you have in your repo anywhere, do you have any place where either you have any like set, you know, YAML files or where other people can have their own to contribute?
Not yet. I am publishing. I will be publishing my tracks.yaml file in the repo. I'm still kind of refining it. I had a custom processor for Mark that forked on all of these different, because Mark sets environment variables for like extension and stuff. So my very long custom processor forked on at least 10 different kind of criteria and ran different processors. So right now I'm splitting that up, and I have If it's a readme.md file, run GitHub preprocessor and then run GitHub processor. If it's from Bear, run this processor. If it's from Obsidian, run this processor. So I'm building that out right now. And once I have it finished, I will publish it and all of the pre and post processor scripts. I don't have like a plugin architecture built, so it doesn't make sense to have separate repos for everything.
But yeah, I was just...
But But I will make a directory. People can pull requests, anything.
That's awesome. Yeah, no, because I was just thinking, I was like, because I've always, I knew about the custom processor part of Marked. I never used it in part because of what you said, like you can only kind of have one, and it'd be one of those things to be like, okay, well then I have to like maintain all these things, you know, and it's just like, okay, the thing is that in most cases, what you have built in is fine. So, like, unless it was kind of like a very specific one-off thing, like I don't think I've ever touched it. But this having like basically having variables that can say, okay, if it has this or whatnot, then, you know, it'll depend, like, cause that would be great. Cause like for me, like a frequent thing is like, I obviously, write a lot of things for GitHub and, you know, in GitHub flavor markdown, but I also write things that aren't necessarily going to be published in that style. And so that can have like different rules and whatnot. And so, yeah, like you said, like having like the README thing, like that's awesome.
Amazing.
This is so smart.
Yeah. I think I've added all the criteria that you could possibly need to determine whether you were working on a GitHub flavored markdown file for work or whether you were writing for your blog, for instance. And I think it's super natural language now. You don't have to know how to script at all. And you can install it as a gem. You just run gem install mark-conductor and then set it up as a custom processor. And yeah, I think it will be useful to scripters and non-scripters alike.
I'm super distracted by two things. One is that you just fucked my afternoon. And the other one is that going back to even something that's existed, which is the ability to use Pandoc, because it wasn't like named in there and I never really needed it. My need for that came up 2 weeks ago and it wouldn't have occurred to me to try to figure out how to, you know, have Marked me there.
One of the most common things I deal with in Mark support is people who want to use Pandoc with bibliography and citation files.
I was
going to
say
files,
that would make sense.
Which is possible. Like you could always do that with Marked. And I've worked with a lot of people to make that function. This will make that process. Like you could have multiple citations and bibliographies depending on what project you're working on.
No, that's great. And that's so cool too.
Brett Terpstra
strikes
again.
No, this is the sort of thing that's really cool. And obviously has like a niche kind of audience, but we are all part of that niche. And like I said, like once you have that repo where people can do PRs or whatever, like I think that's where it would become really useful so that like people can just be like, okay, I can install this. If I need to make some modifications, I can. But it'll automatically determine.
It's so with stuff like this, like I would love for people to contribute, but it's stuff like this tends to be so personalized and not generalized. I have built, like, I have a repo for sharing custom styles for Marked. I have repos for doing plugins, and they get actually very little usage because everyone is designing things that they don't think everybody needs. And that's, like, for me, like, as I got into development starting in, like, the year 2000, I started learning how to take something that was a hack to make something work for me. And through the process of Mood Blast, actually, I learned how to make personal things generally useful.
Mood Blast? What the hell is that?
Oh, Mood Blast was his.
Are you kidding?
That was OG Brett. Does it sound like a joke? Tell him.
Yeah, that's my developer origin story. I wrote a.
Tell you what, I didn't come online with you until about 2008.
So I wrote this app in like Cocoa and Apple script that could update Facebook and Jaiku and Twitter and Adium and like all of the places you would have a social
Adium.
And like half the things it could update are gone now. But there were a total of 12 different services at its peak that it could update with. You could just type in your status and hit a button and it would update everything all at once. And
this looks amazing. It makes me so sad for the way that landscape has changed.
to avoid like repeating yourself, there was all this like syntax you could use that would be like, post this to Twitter and post this to Jaiku and
things we know without knowing about the features of something you've created.
Right. And that got picked up by David Chartier at
There's a lot of Ars Technica stuff around like version 2 and 3.
Yep. And he got me my job writing for Tua, and Mood Blast got me into publicly releasing software, and it was absolutely my origin story.
I love it, and I can't believe it's totally alien to
me. It was great. You know, yeah, because I was already at Tua, but I hadn't been there very long when Brett joined. And but yeah, I knew Mood Blast because I think 2.0 had just come out when you
Well, David wrote about every update.
Yeah, he really did.
I would get a 2-hour article, and every time I published an update, my blog readership, like my traffic would go up, and like it just kept growing. And so I just kept updating because I had that like positive feedback loop going on.
It was great. Awesome. It was great. I wish that.
So awesome.
Okay. I'm going to take us on a detour. I do have gratitude picks, but like, I know that the way that the Twitter API now works means that there wouldn't be easy ways to do this. Do you think there would be a way to trick something through, like, I don't know, with some sort of screen background, like kind of process to automate something like this, like where you could potentially like launch in the background, like a browser window, and go into, you know, the status box and enter in the text and do something like that? Like, do you think there's any way that, I'm not saying you, but I'm saying like someone in general could create something like that? Because I wish that I had something like this for Threads and Twitter and Mastodon.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Threads has always promised to implement.
Yeah.
What's
yeah.
It? Activity Pub.
Right.
Whatever.
They're syndicating
now. Activity Pub.
Yeah.
Twitter.
You can turn it on. Yeah.
Okay. Twitter's a black box. I don't know if it would be feasible to do like a scripted, like Chrome browser that would do it. I don't know. It would be so much hackery. To be fair, like at the time Mood Blast was
Facebook
didn't have an API, and it did really hacky curl calls, to kind of like I hacked their submit forms in a way that would let me post. Now they have a public API, but you can only use it for pages or
I think so.
It's only for pages actually. And Instagram only allows posting if you have like business level account. And all of these APIs are pretty closed off to the average user. In a way that makes it even more difficult than it was era. I would think if it were possible.
Well, the reason I asked is, so I use this NPM extension called SnapTweet, which will basically take like a screenshot of your tweets. And so what you do is, it's a CLI tool, and you enter in snap dash tweet and put in the URL. I actually probably should submit a pull request to include the x.com URLs, because right now it's set up to do it for Twitter. And then what it does behind the scenes, and it's worked for a long time, and he hasn't updated it in years, so it's still working, is that it basically launches like a Puppeteer instance, because you already have to have Chrome installed, and then basically will select in the CSS things, kind of like in the background very quickly. Okay, I'm gonna capture this bit of logic and then style it in some ways. And you can, with various parameters, you can set it to like make the width different, and you can make it dark mode or light mode or whatever. And then you can also choose like if you want to do multiple at once, and you can even do threads. It's very cool. It's a very, very cool tool. And I've used it for a long time. But like, I'm thinking, okay, if you can do something like that, in theory, And I don't know. And again, I'm not asking you to do this, but I'm just kind of thinking out loud. Like, there might be a thing where if you already had a cookie installed or whatever, where you might be able to, you know, program in, okay, this is where the tweet box is, and this is where the send thing is. And so I can go ahead and just, you know, programmatically put in the text and then send, send it out.
Have we, remind me, have we talked about CurlyQ?
So
I have a side project, another side project called CurlyQ.
Oh yeah, we have talked about this. It's a web scraping tool. Tell us more.
Yeah. And well, in a recent update, I added JavaScript execution.
And that's what it's using. It's not using Puppeteer, it's using Selenium. Sorry, go on.
So yeah, so you can target like a CSS query selector and execute JavaScript on the page from a CurlyQ call. I don't know. I mean, it's just it's a layer above Selenium. So yeah, I'd be curious. Will Twitter handle a JavaScript submission? I feel like if they knew what they were doing, they would deny that because
However, spam. But I also don't think they have a lot of people who are who are watching, right? Because that's the thing,
right?
Because like, the snap tweet thing, right? Like, and obviously I know it's different, and that's a much easier thing to do, but it makes me think. But there are some other tools, like I can't think of the name of it right now, but there's like an archive, I think it's Archivebox. There are some tools that still, even without the API things, can scrape tons of tweets and even get like the, you know, the text from them and whatnot and do it like fairly well. And I think that it's one of those things that's like, it obviously goes against what Elon is trying to accomplish when he cut off the API. But I also think he just doesn't fucking know what he's doing.
Wait, hold up one sec. Wasn't they closed the API.
Well, they limited Elon took aspects over of it, but you could still do it. Things. So for instance, okay, you could still have like, you know, Twitterific could work. And the thing is if you were an individual, you could sign up for one and you could build like, you could have built something like Moodblast and you could have said, okay, as a user, you need to enter in your own API.
Yep.
Right. That, you know, you would say, I'm not going to do this, but you as a user can enter in your own API key. I'll show you how to set up an app, whatever. Fine. When they started adding kind of restrictions on that and were like, no, you can only do like 1,000 calls or 100 calls or whatever it is, you know, for the lowest tier, like that kind of killed that. Cause there was like a cross posting tool for Mastodon and Twitter that lived, and it was even a web hosted, there was a hosted version and I even like self-hosted my own. And I looked at like, well, what would it take to like continue to maintain this? And people just didn't want to continue doing it, which is fair. That was what he did, is he changed it from, okay, like anybody can, you know, still create these things and have like a valid free tier to, no, now the minimum amount of money you'd have to spend would be like $100 to do anything basically. And, if you wanted to, you know, do something even for the public, to be more like it's going to cost you, you know, enterprise money. So.
Speaking of APIs, did you know that Google has a search API now? Like, this was something that was always missing, and all of the old, like the text,
yes, mate, Yahoo,
Well, no, it actually used Google, but it would scrape the page for the results. And Google made that impossible. But I just discovered while working on SearchLink, another one of my projects, that Google has an API, and I'm doing the thing you said where people, if they want to use my Google integration with SearchLink, which typically uses DuckDuckGo, if you want to use the Google integration, you have to get your own API key. But if you enter an API key in the config, it can do an actual, like, legit API Google search, which avoids like paid or you can avoid sponsored links and everything.
We've talked about it before. I think it was one of my picks of the week, or maybe it was yours, Brett, but because it's on setup. It's called Typing Mind, and it's like a OpenAI or another model kind of front end for stuff. And they have extensions now. And one of the extensions is like a web search type of thing or like web scraping thing. And to get that working, you have to set up an API thing in your Google account, which I went through the process of doing. And like I hadn't known that, like that was going to be it's plugins is what they're called. Yeah. So they have like a web search thing. And to get that working, you need a search API key. And I went and I created that. And it turned out that I already had something for some reason. So I guess I did know this, but I didn't. But they do the same thing that you were talking about, where they're like, this plugin allows the AI assistant to search for information from the internet in real time using Google search. Search API key needed. So I did know this, but I only learned this like a month ago.
Huh.
Nice. Yeah. Huh. Okay. I think we're done. I think we're done with my project.
Graptitude lightning round?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so you only say like three sentences or something. I'm just kidding.
I can do that.
Do whatever you need to do. I can't say three sentences about anything. That was not a realistic.
All right, I can start. I can make it real fucking short. I'm going to pick Textra, which I don't think I've picked before, but I have such a short memory. But it's a command line utility written in Swift that interfaces with macOS's built-in OCR and transcription capabilities. And you can basically run Textra on any image and it will spit out the like ASCII text for whatever text exists in that image. And it is real damn good for something that's, you know, just built into the operating system, but gives you command line access. And it can also like transcribe like MP3s. It doesn't do as good a job with MP3s as like Whisper does. But it does a perfectly passable job. And I use Textra every time I publish a Dimspiration. Textra generates alt tags for the Dimspirations automatically. And it is, I would say, 90% accurate, depending on what font I use. If I use a crazy font or I like make it like slightly invisible at the background, which I am wont to do, but, it will do an amazing job of picking up the text and writing my alt tags for me. It's free. It's free. Even if it sucks on some stuff, it's
excellent.
It's worth checking out.
I played with that a long time ago. And also on their GitHub repo page, their example is using it on the Mueller report. Yes. This is like made me feel totally old all of a sudden. Wow. Also made me check the change log. It's like, huh. I can go quick. Mine is this. I actually just changed it to this because of our conversation. Is Texts, which is an app that like
it's almost ADM. Like
ADM. How'd you say?
Yeah.
It's like I've got all my messages from LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, WhatsApp. And you could do Apple Messages. It makes me a little nervous. You can do Signal. How? I don't know. I don't understand.
They run a backend server thing. Go ahead. There are some ways. Yes, it was.
But that's what Beeper was doing.
Was the old model was doing exactly what text.com does. And then they started doing something a little bit different for their Android version when the kid reverse engineered the thing. It's slightly different. And interestingly, Automattic, who owns text.com, bought Beeper, and Eric, who is now running the whole thing. So he's going to be like Text and Beeper basically are eventually going to merge.
Okay.
Yeah. And it's amazing because I mean, like, come on, the LinkedIn messages, like I don't want to see them really, but I also don't want to miss the one or two that I wanted to see.
I check LinkedIn like once a month.
Yeah.
And there will be messages that I missed a month ago that are no longer relevant and would have been nice to see in the moment. But I never remember to check.
Like I also that. Would have missed this one from Instagram. Hi, I'm Hannah, a girl who believes in fate and the soulmate whom I have been seeking for years, but I didn't get to meet the right person yet. Sad emoji. So I have been thinking this would be fun to send a message to you, like spinning a wheel of fortune and telling you. I mean, I missed that. Damn it. It came in like 2 weeks ago. She's found someone by now. Second I loaded all this stuff in, I had all of my messages going back 17 years for these
That's
services.
Impressive.
Wow.
And it's
how's the search?
Oh, I haven't even tried the search because I just needed to make sure I didn't miss people. Hold on, let's search.
It would be infinitely useful if you could search all of those platforms at the same time with any kind of accuracy.
It's interesting. I have to play with it more. I'm doing it right now. But yeah, so anyway, it's great. And even the kind of cute thing is even their change logs, they become their own inbox message in the midst of all this stuff. So along with Riley, who's looking for a soulmate, I've got their latest, change log message. So anyway, it's cool. Super cool. And you can add Signal and stuff. But again, I don't really understand. Whoa, Brett, you just VCR
color is
error
converting
video. Weird.
That's super, super cool.
That was amazing.
I look fine to me, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
I haven't used text.com, but I have used Beeper for years, and it's the same. Well, and it's soon going to literally become the same thing. So plus one on this. Some of the services, the way at least Beeper worked, I don't know if text is the same, is that it was using Matrix under the hood. And so there were some bridges that people made, and that's how Signal and other stuff worked. A lot of that stuff was open sourced, and I expect that with Automattic being the joint owner, those things will continue to be, assuming they're open, will be open. Great stuff. And like, I miss Adium every day, and I miss open APIs every day.
Oh my God. I miss that cute little freaking, so adorable. Adorable. That one, if you had that in Cyberbuck open, it was like,
right.
It was like really looking was. At a Scottish bull.
It really was.
It was just too cute.
So, you're great. Okay, so Christine, my pick, sorry. So I was bitching on Threads, which is a terrible platform. I should add Threads is the worst. It's normies.
Agreed.
It's terrible. It's normies. Terrible. So you see like 2 day old hot takes and like others. People are like, well, you just I don't see 2 day old stuff. You're just not using enough this and that. I'm like, well, fuck you, honestly. You have people who've never grown up on the internet who then just like feel like they should just be responding to randos comments. And I'm like, this isn't Twitter, and you weren't raised here, and you don't know the culture, and you're just being dicks for no reason. Case in point, I was sorry. Go on.
Can I? Oh, I was just going to interject. The thing that kills me about Threads is I don't see the people I follow. It just shows me queer people looking for followers, because apparently it's pegged me as a queer person. And all it shows me are people I've never heard of, never followed.
Soulmates, dude.
I agree.
The following habit, no you tap on the thing so that you can see like your following thing, like that's better, but it defaults every single time to their attempt to, you know, be TikTok, but they're not as good as TikTok. And also it's not real time like Twitter is. Like even Twitter's For You page, like it might not be the latest thing, but it's more relevant. Like Threads, literally it's 2 day old shit that you see.
Yeah.
It sucks. Threads is not a great place. But I will say this, the one good thing about Threads is I was harassed by a bunch of dickheads who were defending Apple Music on the Mac. Because I look, and I didn't even say what I really wanted to say. What I really wanted to say is that Apple Music for Mac is an abortion of an application. That could be a show title. It probably shouldn't be, but that is actually what I wanted to say.
But like, we have Muppets.
But Apple Music
Christine,
for Mac is
Muppets
genuinely
options.
One of the worst applications that exists on the planet. It is a bad application. It makes a mid-range service that has good audio quality. Look, I pay for Apple Music and I use it on my phone, but it's terrible on the Mac. Like it is fucking awful, especially if you have a decent library size. So somebody was asking, well, if I want a local music playback, like what should I use? And I had like a couple of suggestions that I was going to give them. And then somebody, I did some research. I was like, is there anything I'm missing? And I came across an app that I think I checked out a while ago, but I hadn't checked out in a long time. And it's called Swincian. And it is basically what iTunes was before the Apple Music integration, but more modernized, and also plays back FLAC and other types of, you know, files that iTunes never did.
Because right. Jesus Christ.
And so it's $25 as a one-time purchase. If you download the version that's on their website, that's like a version 2. It doesn't have dark mode support. But if you then press the option key and do check for updates, you can get the beta of version 3, which is updated fairly frequently. And like the most recent version, I think, came out like a couple weeks ago. And that supports dark mode and stuff. It is still a Rosetta app, but I haven't noticed any performance things. So, you know, if you're a purist for some reason, like, I'm just pointing that out. But it's really good. Like, if you're somebody who wants local music playback for whatever reason, because maybe you're like me.
For FLAC.
Well, that's what I want because I have, I'm not joking, I have like 80 something gigabytes of downloaded like FLAC files. And so, I would like to get a room, but exactly. And I would like to get a rune or something, but that's expensive. It's $15 a month, and I might do that eventually, but I'm not there yet. So in this circumstance, I'm like, okay, actually, this is a good thing. So Swincian is my gratitude.
Awesome. Cool.
Yeah, I'm gonna check that out.
I want a ruin.
I don't have nearly as many local files as you do. I rely mostly on Spotify.
But I like having, and I'm a hoarder.
I'm still having that problem on my Mac where Spotify, if I play songs with Spotify on my Mac, every 10 seconds the playback cuts out. And
oh yeah, I've been having that problem too.
I am not the only person.
I have the problem on my HomePod.
I've been on the forums and
it's awful.
Like a bunch, and Spotify has like no response to this. It is apparently pretty common. So I can't but what I can do is with my whole loopback setup and everything, I can just, stream from my phone, or I can have Alexa, sorry, shut up, Alexa. I can have her play, using Spotify, and it pipes through my computer. And then once a song is playing, Spotify is such good sync between platforms. I can use the desktop app to fast forward and rewind, but the playback is actually coming from my
Echo. that Rube Goldberg bullshit setup is what you have to do proves Christina's initial point, because this should be really easy. And
yeah, well, he's using Spotify,
amazing.
But still, yeah, but.
I know. That's not. But I do that.
No,
with Spotify.
No, you're not
I'm
wrong.
Avoiding
right?
Apple Music, I go through all this weird shit.
Garbage. It is such hard garbage that I'm like, do I want to launch this on my Mac? Yeah. Fuck no. Are you kidding me? So somebody was like, I've never had any problems, and I have a really large library. I have 12,000 tracks and dozens of playlists. And I was like, that's what I said.
Sit down, child.
Dozens of playlists.
Dozens of playlists. Jesus Christ! How old are you?
12,000 files. And I was like, I was like, that's cute. I was like, I had more than that on my iPod 20 years ago.
Yeah, I had dozens of quote unquote playlists by the time I was 10.
To me, I was like, okay,
yeah.
Right. But I was like, congratulations. I was like, that's not a large library. I think it's a large library. It's actually not. And people are like, well, how do you listen to 100,000 tracks? I'm like, you don't. But if the whole idea is you can be a music library, Jesus then Christ. Let me have a fucking music library. Don't make me have to go through.
Also, it's called being a music fan, Sonny Boy Williamson.
Anyway, the
yeah. Yeah. Can I just say my new favorite kind of playlist is I go back on that, concerts database site is, which I'm forgetting right now. Yeah. Set list. And I make playlists that are the songs.
Yeah.
From the
there,
show I
there
saw
are a couple
band.
Of apps.
Like
there are a couple of apps that actually do that for iOS. Yeah, they do.
Oh yeah. Cause they have an API and they'll, that's right. That's right.
No, totally. I do it artisanally. I used to do it artisanally, but like when I realized that there was actually like iOS apps, I was like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for sure. That's great. Thanks for that tip. Awesome.
All right. We did another 2-hour show.
Yeah, but we did it without a guest and with a very contained
and we hadn't had an episode in like a month. So.
Yeah, it was a lot. The pipes were clogged.
Yeah. Right on. All right. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you. Get some sleep.
Get some sleep.
The system is going down now.